The following program is produced and paid for by Temple Emmanuel.
Sooner or later, you can bet your life that every Jew in this building is going to say the same thing. He's a little too Jewish for my taste.
Shalom, and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and Friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is Shemu Sadeh, the founder and director of Adama, the largest Jewish educational farm in America, and part of the Renewable Resources Food Movement. We'll also have visits from our two Jewish expert on the international scene, Tom Price, and our maven on Israel, Guy Gelbert. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio@yahoo.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. Two Jewish is sponsored this morning by Temple Emmanuel, a Reform Jewish community for all of Tucson. Call 327-4501 for information on Arizona's finest synagogue, the only full-service Reform congregation in southern Arizona. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Two Jewish.
Shalom. Purim is coming up March 19th and 20th, 2 weeks from last night and 2 weeks from today. While it is the silliest Jewish holiday and in many ways the most fun, it's often neglected by adults as a kids' festival. That's a shame, because the truth is that we need our religious life to be both meaningful and fun, if not always at the same time. Judaism has always understood this and has incorporated into its annual calendar both the overwhelming seriousness of Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement, and the ridiculous frivolity of Purim, the Feast of Esther. And in a subtle way, it's chosen to make them polar opposites, twin festivals almost exactly 6 months apart, half a year, with completely reversed traditions and practices. The parallels, or rather the reversals, are fascinating. Beginning with their placement on the calendar, they include food, dress, music, and seriousness. On Yom Kippur, we fast. On Purim, we feast. On Yom Kippur, we are to be deeply serious, while on Purim, we are to revel and be as silly as possible. On Yom Kippur, we dress in all white. But on Purim, we dress in costumes of every color and construction. On Yom Kippur, we pray all day. But on Purim, we perform plays and parodies, have carnivals and celebrations, play games of chance. On Yom Kippur, we are not to drink at all, not even water. On Purim, we are commanded to drink alcohol, ad delo yada, until we can't tell the difference between the evil Haman and the good Mordechai. On Yom Kippur, there is music of great power and sanctity like Kol Nidre. On Purim, there is, oh, today we'll merry, merry be, and other silly songs. You know, if holidays were human beings, Yom Kippur would be Mother Teresa, and Purim would be Charlie Sheen. These holidays could not be any more different, and both still be Jewish. Yet oddly, the mystics saw in Purim a similarity to Yom Kippur. They noted that Yom Kippur, called in Hebrew Yom HaKippurim, can be translated as Yom Kippurim, the day that's like Purim. And not only Kabbalists saw it this way, so did that noted anti-mystic, the Vilna Gaon. The reasoning of those great minds on this subject is very complex. As one rabbi wrote, we would assume that Yom Kippur is the greater of the 2 days, but in one sense, Purim is even greater. It's easier to achieve spiritual elevation on a day like Yom Kippur, when we pray and have no time for forbidden activities like gossip or getting angry. By fasting, the soul achieves dominance over the body. But on Purim, in our state of rambunctious drunkenness, it is much harder to maintain our human dignity. No kidding. As Rabbi Eliyahu Kitov writes, if one attains holiness through affliction and another attains holiness through indulgence, who is the greater of the two? It may be said that the one who attains holiness through indulgence is greater, for the attainment of holiness through indulgence requires an infinitely greater degree of striving and effort. In this way, the challenge of Purim is greater, he says. Literally translated, Yom HaKippurim is only a day like Purim, not as good. Well, okay, frankly, I don't buy it. To me, Purim is much more a reflection of the fact that people need humor and joy at least as much as they need serious introspection. Purim is here to teach us that even the Holy Blessed One likes a good party now and then. You know, like all the other springtime festivals, whether Mardi Gras, Spring Fling, or Rodeo, Purim is fun, a great way to usher in the end of winter with a wild, over-the-top, rambunctious celebration. Inhibitions are out and revelry for one night and day is in. It's as though we've been good for so long we need to let down our hair, change our clothes, really celebrate. Reminds me of that nine-word summary of every Jewish festival from Hanukkah through Pesach, including Purim. They tried to kill us, we won, let's eat. On Purim we add, and drink, pure irresponsible fun. But there's also something more profound going on at Purim than just this good, unwholesome time. You know, there's a famous joke that says that on Purim we Jews dress up and pretend to be non-Jews, while on Yom Kippur we dress up and pretend to be Jews. Purim is here to remind us that Judaism, our own Judaism, your Judaism, can be, should be, enjoyable and meaningful, that being Jewish is a gift and a blessing and a rollicking good time. So, no matter how old or young you are, or if you have or don't have kids, come to Purim this year. It's coming up in a couple weeks, Saturday night, March 19th, Sunday, March 20th. Come to my synagogue, Temple Emmanuel, and have a fairly wholesome and extremely good time. And then go to an Orthodox one and party all night like they do. And don't miss the great Purim spiels and carnivals either. To get us in the Purim mood, here's Paul Zim singing Mishenichnas Adar. When we enter the month of Adar, which we begin this morning, the month of Purim, we magnify joy.
Mishen, 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 mishenichnas Adar. Mishen, 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 mishenichnas Adar. Mishenichnas Adar, marvim besimcha. Mishenichnas Adar, marvim besimcha.
That was Paul Zim's Mishenichnas Adar for the month of Purim. When we return in a few moments on Too Jewish, we'll meet our guest, Shamu Sadeh, the fascinating and very knowledgeable founder of Adama, largest Jewish educational farm in America. Find out what's Jewish about renewable agriculture when we come back on Too Jewish.
Safety. It's a word we take for granted at home and at the workplace, but sometimes safety isn't a sure thing. Environmental Strategies, Inc. is an environmental remediation company that's been promoting safe living in Arizona since 1989. Environmental Strategies specializes in asbestos and lead abatement, mold remediation, and industrial cleaning. In addition, they have a building and remodeling division that makes it convenient for clients to get all their services from one contractor. Environmental Strategies jobs range from seam tape removal in a single-family home to insulation removal in a Challenger Learjet aircraft and everything in between. So, if you're in need of asbestos or lead removal, mold remediation, industrial cleaning, or top-notch general contracting services, call Environmental Strategies today at 884-1114. Estimates and bids are free and confidential. Ken Goodman is the president, and he'd love to talk with you about your project. Environmental Strategies, serving all of Arizona since 1989. Call 884-1114.
Hi, Joe Spina, Mama's Pizza. Sometimes I think my brother Vinny and I are the luckiest guys in the whole wide world. You see, to us, Mama's is more than just a restaurant. It's a connection to our past. Back in New York, food was the center of our lives. Our family got together for almost any reason to enjoy the great Italian dishes our mom used to make. The scent of slow-cooking marinara. The distinct aroma of garlic simmering in olive oil. Pasta boiling on the stove. These are memories that remind me of family, friends, home. Our goal at Mama's is to serve more than just delicious Italian food. Sure, our pizza and calzones are outstanding. Our cheesecake is to die for. But we strive to serve you more. Call it atmosphere or mood. Or you can just call it love. We hope the next time you come into one of Mama's four locations, it'll become one of your pleasant memories. To Vinny and me, that's the measure of our success. Now repeat after me. Mama's Pizza.
Tucson Hebrew Academy is an independent school for children from kindergarten through eighth grade. It has a long-standing track record of academic excellence and an unparalleled integrated general and Judaic studies curriculum. With a variety of music and fine arts classes combined with its award-winning sports program, THA nourishes students in body, mind, and spirit. The atmosphere in the classroom encourages self-assured self-expression, critical thinking, respect for diverse points of view. THA's low student-teacher ratio allows its highly qualified faculty to provide instruction based on the most up-to-date research methods in science, technology, math, and literature. Tucson Hebrew Academy students understand the relevance of Jewish values in the modern world. THA sees learning as a way of life and builds a strong sense of community. They're enrolling now. Please give your child the gift of a THA education. For more information on how to enroll or to schedule a tour, call 529-3888. That's 529-3888 or visit www.thaaz.org. We're delighted to welcome the Two Jewish, our guest this morning, Shamu Sadeh. He is, well, perhaps the face of the new Jewish food movement, according to the Forward newspaper. The Jewish food movement has grown tremendously in recent years, and he is the director of Adama, a farming fellowship for Jews, young Jews, instrumental in training and encouraging a new generation of, I guess, agricultural activists cultivating souls and soils, as they say. Shamu Sadeh is an environmental studies instructor, Jewish educator, writer, organic farmer, and wilderness guide. So how did you get into this?
That's a good question.
But let me rephrase it. What kind of a job is this for a nice Jewish boy?
In a lot of ways, looking back now, with hindsight, I was well-trained for the job. In other words, my father especially comes from a Jewish farming family. My great-grandparents were farmers in the northeastern corner of Hungary in the Carpathian Basin, and they were conservation and organic-minded farmers, and they were followers of a Hasidic rabbi named Isaac Taub of Kahlo. And they were, you know, they, my dad, about 15 years ago, did a bunch of genealogical research and unearthed the fact that our, you know, his grandparents, my great-grandparents, found ways to connect their Judaism to their work with the soil. And that even when we went back and visited this village, where we haven't had family there for, you know, 60, 70 years, the local Hungarians can still point out the fields that belonged to my great-grandfather because of the quality of the soil. Isaac Taub, my grandparents, great-grandparents' rabbi, was a Hasidic master, and he was also, you know, one of these kind of nature rabbis. He would take his inspirations from spending time in the outdoors and walking the fields. When people would ask him a particularly difficult question, he would take a nap under his favorite walnut tree, and there, expecting that the answers would come to him in dreams. And the idea of the redemption of the sparks, right? That all the Kabbalists or the Hasidic movement brought back this idea that the material world is holy, is potentially holy at the very least, and that those things that we reject are sparks, right? That, as it says in the Psalms, Evan Masu Habonim Haita L'Rosh Pina, right? The stone that the builders rejected will become the cornerstone. So that apple peel, that last week's cholent, that that doesn't smell so good. It is through all that and the leaves and everything else we gather that that we can redeem them through our act of composting and thus make, you know, make fertility and make for a sustainable food system. That's a long answer. The shorter answer is also that I grew up in D.C. in the city, but my dad tore up our front lawn and grew a big garden there. He was the garden columnist for the Washington Post and advocated organic growing since the early 70s.
You know, it's a great explanation, a couple of explanations. And I think about how the Baal Shem Tov really reoriented Jews at the beginning of the Hasidic movement towards the earth, and that is a strong trend, or was for a long time a strong trend in Hasidism. Do you think of yourself as a contemporary Hasid in that sense?
I don't. I think of myself as someone who's taken their lessons and appreciated all the, you know, the lessons I've taken from them.
We will come back this morning with the fascinating Shamu Sadeh, the director of Adama, a little while on Too Jewish.
If your parents or loved ones are in need of advanced assisted living care, then you should know about Handmakers Tynan Neighborhood. It's the only program of its type in Tucson, and is designed for seniors whose needs have exceeded the care available from other assisted living programs. Dorothy Ho is a resident at Handmaker, and she's very pleased with her living arrangements.
My apartment is very comfortable. It's kind of like home now. And everybody here is very pleasant, too.
Dorothy's daughter Gretchen's experience speaks volumes about Handmaker's approach to family and loved ones.
When she first came to Handmaker, I can honestly say that I felt as loved and cared for as my mother has stated recently that she feels she is loved and cared for here.
Handmaker is centrally located on Rosemont, just south of Grand, and includes one and two bedroom suites, cozy studios with patios and balconies, along with a wonderfully caring staff.
I don't even consider them staff, they're friends.
Phone Handmaker today for your tour and consultation, 322-7035, or visit handmaker.org. Not just music, but the hills are alive with the sound of Purim. The most thoroughly fun Jewish holiday of all is coming to Temple Emmanuel in the greatest show yet. Sunday, March 20th at 10 a.m., the Purim Extravaganza Show and Spectacular Carnival will make this fabulously fun festival into a wonderful celebration for all ages. It's the Sound of Purim, a wonderful parody of The Sound of Music, exploring the story of the Book of Esther in full musical theater style, including takeoffs of all the classic songs from Doa Deer to My Favorite Things, in a spirit of humor, fun, and flat-out silliness. It's a Purim day filled with comedy, clowning, magic, games, fabulous food, don't miss the finest hamantaschen in all of Arizona, and carnival celebration. Everyone's invited, and the Purim show and entrance to the carnival are absolutely free. Call 327-4501 for more information. Come one, come all to the biggest and best Purim celebration in Arizona, all at Temple Emmanuel, Sunday, March 20th at 10 a.m. Call 327-4501 for Purim Extravaganza Fun for adults and children.
If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kvel, please email us at twojewishradio@yahoo.com or call 520-327-4501 or visit our website at twojewishradio.com. You can also get CDs of past and present shows by contacting us through the website, twojewishradio.com, or downloading us from there or from the Apple iTunes store as very popular podcasts. For many years, every problem in the Middle East has been wrongly attributed to Israel's actions, or if you are European, to Israel's very existence. Never has this been more conclusively proven to be false than in the past 2 months, as spontaneous uprisings against the corrupt secular dictatorships in Tunisia, Egypt, Libya, Yemen, and Bahrain, and major demonstrations in Jordan, Iran, Algeria, Oman, and Iraq have had nothing whatsoever to do with Israel or the Palestinians. The Arab world has been convulsing, oil prices rising, and none of it has anything to do with Zionism or Israel or the poor, benighted, self-destructive Palestinians. If you had any idea that the major issue in the Middle East, let alone in the world today, was the Palestinians, then these last months have made it abundantly, exquisitely clear that this is simply not the case. The main issues in the Arab world today are the immense, incompetent corruption of its leadership, the economic, social welfare, and technological inferiority of their societies, the overt sexism that eliminates the potential contributions of half their people, that is, all the women, and the Islamist agitation to take these countries not forward, but backwards. Israel has nothing to do with Arab countries' collective inability to accept and embrace the 21st century. Palestinians are a tiny, very much unloved fragment of the much greater Arab world, used as a cause célèbre to distract people from the general misery of their own lives under permanently pathetic regimes. And now, with the collapse of several Arab despotisms in North Africa, Tunisia, Egypt, and Libya, and the shaky foundation of the rest of the brutal dictators tenuously grasping the reins of corrupt power, perhaps some people in the West will awaken to these facts. But I don't expect it soon. After all, in Phoenix last week, a group protesting the oppressive regime in Bahrain did so in the name of Palestinian freedom. Mind you, Palestinians are from an area over 1,000 miles from Bahrain as the camel walks, and their only relationship to it is from being guest workers in Bahrain. But perhaps, just maybe, the reality of the fact that Arab problems and the often virulent hostility to the West within the Arab world have essentially nothing to do with Zionism or Israel may eventually penetrate the minds of some of the conveniently critical idiots who pretend that all problems in the Middle East come from the fact that Jews have built a successful, democratic, free country in the midst of all this backward, impoverished repression. In keeping with our new Two Jewish tradition of playing the music of the Jewish communities that used to live in the Arab countries currently in full rebellion, here's a flavor of the Yemenite Jewish community, almost all of whom now live in Israel and elsewhere. Their story, however, is fascinating. Many ethnologists think the Yemenite Jews, the Jews from Yemen, are the oldest diaspora community of all, and that their religious practice and music are the closest to biblical Judaism, and that their Hebrew pronunciation is the most authentic of any Jewish group in the world. The major exodus of most Yemenite Jews to Israel took place in the 1950s, fleeing Muslim repression, murder, and extreme poverty in Yemen. In 1952, Operation Magic Carpet, run by Israel, brought some 50,000 Yemenite Jews to Israel in one fell swoop. Today, the Jewish community in Yemen is reduced to a very small remnant, perhaps 350 Jews, mostly in the remote Hadramaut region. But the deep and rich culture of Yemenite Jewry spans well over 2,000 years, and by tradition could even be over 3,000 years. At one point, about 1,500 years ago, Yemen actually had a Jewish king and then another, and was essentially controlled by its Jews. But for most of its history, the greatness of Yemenite Jewry was its scholarship and its remarkable textual and musical fidelity to tradition. Perhaps the most famous Yemenite-descended Jew is the great Israeli and world music singer Ofra Chaza, whose parents immigrated from Yemen to Tel Aviv in the early 1950s. She was born in 59. Her first big international hit was the Yemenite song Im Min Alu. That was the late, great Israeli Yemenite singer Ofra Chaza singing Im Min Alu. We welcome our maven on Israel, Guy Gelbart, our expert. Good morning, Guy.
Good morning, Rabbi.
Guy, people talk about the Palestinians as though they were the only people in the world that had a claim to a land but didn't have it. But the truth is much more ancient peoples, much more numerous, also don't have self-determination. We were talking earlier about the Kurds in Kurdistan. Let's explore that. You know, there's a lot of Kurds, and they don't have a country either, do they?
That's exactly true. The Kurds are 40 million Kurds living today in what ought to be Kurdistan. But there is no country called Kurdistan. Actually, their land is currently occupied by Iran on one side, Turk on the other side.
Turkey, right.
Turkey, Syria, and Iraq. In Iraq, they do have a self-contained area that is kind of an autonomy that they control themselves.
Autonomous area, more or less protected by Western troops for a while.
Right. But on the other countries, especially at Turkey, they're totally occupied. And actually, we heard terrible stories and information about what's happening there. You know, at the times of Saddam Hussein controlling Iraq, Saddam Hussein actually fired chemical gas, like a nerve gas, against their villages. Just lately, we heard the Turkish government have been sending commandos to the areas of the Kurds and destroying their villages, trying to push them out of Turkey's ground, which, you know, in doings that might be considered by many as ethnical cleanings of some sort.
Ethnic cleansing, right? Yeah.
Now, it's interesting because I've been talking about this aspect with many human rights activists here in Tucson that are very supportive for the Palestinians. And they claimed, well, the Kurds don't call for help, they don't ask us to help them, but that's not true. Actually, the Kurds have many organizations, some of them more legitimate, some maybe not as so legitimate. Some of them even considered a terrorist organizations like the PKK.
Right.
But they're certainly fighting for their independence in all ways they know about. And their conditions is by far worse than the conditions of the Palestinians. I would like to share with you on a personal note that at the last year and a half that I've been in Israel, I've been living in a moshav of Kurdish Jewish people that came to live in Israel. And I know them, the Kurds, on a personal basis. And I can tell you, they are the most warm and happy, and they have great hospitality. They're very friendly people, and it's been a pleasure knowing them on a personal basis.
You know, it's ironic because, of course, the Kurds are Muslims too, most predominantly, and here they're oppressed by other Muslims. So somehow the rights of Muslims seem to matter more only when they're oppressed by Jews. Not to say anything about that, but maybe that has a factor too. Guy, thanks very much. We will talk next week.
Thank you.
When we come back, we'll hear from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, and get the old Jewish joke of the week. We visit weekly with the great restaurateur, Janos Weiler of Janos J-Bar and Downtown Kitchen and Cocktails. Good morning, Janos.
Good morning, Rabbi.
So Downtown Kitchen and Cocktails is a wonderful new place, maybe the best in Arizona.
Well, we just won Best New Restaurant in Tucson.
I heartily concur. What's your favorite stuff on the menu?
There's so many things that we do well downtown. It's really the foods of the entire world. And so at lunch, we do this great pounded Laotian pounded papaya salad. At dinner, have the trout with oysters and cream corn. Late night, you got to have the downtown burger.
And you can hear great music there late night too, can't you?
You don't have to go to bed early. You can stay up late Thursday, Friday, and Saturday nights, listen to live jazz, great specials on the late night menu, great drinks, incredible cocktails we make there, by the way. It's in the name.
I have to say, try the Game Changer Soup, too. What's the phone number for Downtown Kitchen and Cocktails?
623-7700.
Or it's www.downtownkitchen.com.
That's it.
We'll see you there, Janos.
Thank you.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reformed, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
So we started talking about Egypt, which has been the cause celeb all this year, that is the secular year. Started talking about the national identity of Egypt. You know, all the Arab countries have had some kind of dictatorship for a very long time. And whatever democracy has been there is, seems to me, kind of a lip service democracy. Is there likely to be some larger democratic process to come out of that? Is that a realistic expectation for the Arab world in 2011?
All right, well, let's look at a few facts about recent Arab history, okay? First fact is that until relatively recently, as history goes, all of these countries were either colonies of Western European powers, France, England, what, briefly Italy in the case of Libya, whatever. But
Germany a little bit, tiny bit along the way. But
yeah. But for centuries, all of these countries were mere provinces, and in fact, backwater provinces of the Ottoman Empire. So while the Ottomans developed a great culture in Istanbul and elsewhere, the Arabs suffered being relegated to backwater status, and really only a few cities had any importance, and their importance was more historic than anything else. Cairo, Damascus,
Baghdad.
Eventually, yeah, Baghdad. Okay, so what happened when the Ottoman Empire was dismembered as a result of World War I is that the British and the French between them divided all this territory into arbitrary countries with arbitrary borders that really didn't reflect any kind of reality except administrative convenience. And in most cases, they chose either the individual or the family that would rule over these artificial creations. So most of the things we look at as countries on the map of the Arab world, beginning, let's say, with Morocco in the west and going all the way to Iraq in the east and a little bit north and south from there too, don't have historic identities, with the important exception of Egypt and maybe also the important exception of Yemen at the other end of the Red Sea. Okay? They've got a bit of a national identity. But basically, these other places are Arabs living in states that were created by Brits and French less than 100 years ago. During all of their history, they never had any semblance of democracy, basic freedoms, respect for human rights. All the things we take for granted from our Constitution and our Bill of Rights were absent from these places. So how should they suddenly learn them? Now, that's a question worth exploring, I think, and maybe we should focus on that a little bit next week. But the other question is, this kind of change, which is going to lead to a period of uncertainty, to say the least, should we fear it or should we welcome it?
Excellent question, and one that is hotly debated right now. We will continue this discussion next week. Thanks, Tom.
I look forward to it.
And now it's time for the old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie knew. Brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. A rabbi is opening his mail one morning. Taking a single sheet of paper from an envelope, he finds written on it one word. Schmuck. At the next Shabbat service, the rabbi announces, I have known many people who have written letters and forgotten to sign their names, but this week I received a letter from someone who signed his name and forgot to write the letter. That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish, just for you. You should live and be well and remember to write the letter. And now a word of Torah. This week we begin the middle book of the Torah, Leviticus. The Hebrew name comes from its first word, Vayikra, God called. It's a book filled with ritual observance and rites that are designed to create and nurture sanctity. But it begins in an interesting and instructive way. There's a famous idiosyncrasy about the Aleph, the last Hebrew letter in the first word of the book Vayikra, as it is written in the Torah, because it's written much smaller than the other letters of the word. Aleph, a Midrash tells us, is the first letter of the word Ani, I. Therefore, if we wish God to call us directly, we must diminish our focus on I and seek to limit our egotism. If we can do that, then we, like Moses, will be able to clearly hear God's call, Vayikra, to respond, and so find the holiness that makes up the central subject of the book of Leviticus. Less of the I, and so more of God. Only when we diminish the centrality of our self-absorption can we allow God in. Leviticus focuses on the ways our ancestors worshipped God through animal sacrifices, korbanot. For the past 1900 years, ever since the destruction of the Second Temple in Jerusalem, prayer and study and acts of charity and repentance have replaced sacrifice. These are all ways to open ourselves to God and diminish our emphasis on the self. May we all in this week learn to give up something of ourself and so to find God. When we come back on Two Jewish, Shamu Sadeh will explain why Jews are farmers and why that's important. When we return in a few moments on Two Jewish.
When you're looking to buy or sell your home, you probably want Tucson's best realtor on your side. That realtor is Jill Rich. As real estate values change, it's comforting to know that Jill Rich knows Tucson's real estate landscape. She follows the trends. She knows the neighborhoods. She even knows how to help you find financing. But most importantly, Jill cares. It doesn't matter if you're looking for a starter home or a castle. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. For sellers, Jill will develop a personal marketing program that'll sell your house fast. There's no one who knows Tucson real estate better. You can reach Jill Rich at Long Realty's River and Campbell office. Call 349-0174. Jill Rich, providing strong representation in a caring way. Call 349-0174.
We continue with our Two Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
Didn't you just know it would come down to this? As the brutal Arab dictatorships collapse and totter across the Middle East, completely independent of Israelis or Palestinians, sooner or later, one of these presidents for life was going to blame the Jews. And this week, it finally happened. The president of Yemen, Ali Abdullah Saleh, last week said that Washington was running an operations room out of Israel with the intent of fomenting instability in the region. And Al Jazeera Network, the faithful lapdog of Arab dictators and terrorists, faithfully reported it. Saleh then fired the governors of five provinces where anti-regime protests have raged, mostly in the former South Yemen, a separate country that Yemen annexed in 1991. Yemen has seen weeks of anti-government protests, despite Saleh's promise to end hereditary rule in the country and not seek another term in office in 2013. He has served as the brutal dictator, head of state, since 1978, a cool 33 years in power. Demonstrations continue nonetheless in the capital, with protesters chanting, "Leave! The people want Ali Abdul Saleh to leave! The people want to overthrow the regime!" Many protesters marched in white shrouds, reading either "We live happily or we die as martyrs." Saleh tried to allay protester concern by reaching out to the opposition, but his rivals rejected his appeals immediately, perhaps because Saleh also said he would defend his regime to the last drop of blood. Eerily similar to what Gaddafi has been saying in Libya. Is there an Arab dictator teleprompter that is pre-programmed with the same lines? Several opposition figures spoke at the demonstrations in Yemen, including leading Islamist cleric, in quotation marks, Abdul Majid al-Zindani, who is called a global terrorist by Washington and no doubt is one. Zindani said the protest movement sweeping the Arab world was a new, effective, fast, and non-destructive means of changing regimes. Sounds like an ad to me. Such a change from the usual destructive means they employ to not actually change regimes in the Arab world. Saleh hit back in an address at Sana'a University. "The events from Tunisia to Oman are a storm orchestrated from Tel Aviv under Washington's supervision," he said. "What has taken place on Yemen streets is just a copycat attempt. The protesters are led from outside and are in the pay of Zionists." Of course, it's not true, but Yemen could clearly use the pay from somebody. Yemenite demonstrators are upset over government corruption and poor living conditions. As much as 40% of the population lives on less than $2 per day. No doubt that's the Zionists' fault, too. John Galliano, the flamboyant British lead designer for Christian Dior since 1996, has been canned for making virulently anti-Semitic statements to another bar patron in Paris. Oh, and making the mistake of doing this while they filmed him with their smartphones. In the video, easily viewed on the web right now, Galliano says that he loves Hitler and tells the people at the next table in the bar in the fashionable and Jewish area of Paris, the Marais, that they and their parents and grandparents would have been gassed. Having watched the racist rant, actually it was delivered kind of calmly, but Natalie Portman, the Israeli-born face of Miss Dior Cherie, released a statement. The newly crowned Best Actress Oscar winner as of last Sunday night for Black Swan said, "I am deeply shocked and disgusted by the video of John Galliano's comments that surfaced today. In light of this video and as an individual who is proud to be Jewish, I will not be associated with Mr. Galliano in any way. I hope at the very least these terrible comments remind us to reflect and act upon combating these still existing prejudices that are the opposite of all that is beautiful." Well said, Natalie. The women's clothing and perfume conglomerate then issued a statement that designer John Galliano had been fired, effective immediately. "I very firmly condemn what was said by John Galliano, which totally contradicts the values which have always been defended by Christian Dior," said Dior CEO Sidney Toledano, who supposedly is a Sephardic Jew, by the way. Galliano's lawyer, Stefan Zerbib, said Galliano, who lives in Paris, denied making racist or anti-Semitic comments. But speculation about his future intensified after a woman lodged a new complaint about a similar incident from Galliano in October. The French anti-racism group, SOS Racisme, said it would also pursue charges against the designer. Dior is one of the biggest fashion brands, with Louis Vuitton at LVMH, the world's number one luxury group, controlled and headed by French billionaire Bernard Arnault. And in other weird anti-Semitic news, WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange accused British journalists of a Jewish conspiracy against him. The accusation was published in the British magazine Private Eye, reporting on a phone call Assange made on February 16th, the magazine's editor, complaining about British coverage of WikiLeaks. Very ironic, isn't it? Private Eye published an article on an Assange associate in Russia, Israel Shamir, saying that he had denied the Holocaust. Assange called the article an obvious attempt to deprive him and his organization of Jewish support and donations. He then went on to say the magazine was part of a conspiracy led by Jewish writers, and specifically cited Guardian newspaper, naming editor Alan Rusbridger, who is not Jewish, and its investigations editor David Lee. Assange responded to the article on Twitter, saying that editor Ian Hislop, who wrote the article, distorted, invented, or misremembered what he said, calling his use of the term Jewish conspiracy false in spirit and in word. "We treasure our strong Jewish support and staff, just as we treasure the support from pan-Arab democracy activists and others who share our hope for a just world," Assange tweeted. Weird week, no? And that's the news of Jews around the world. We're delighted to welcome back to Two Jewish our guest this morning, Shamu Sadeh. He's director of Adama, an environmental studies instructor, Jewish educator, writer, organic farmer, and wilderness guide. He's taught environmental studies, ecology, and Judaic studies at Portland State University, Berkshire Community College, Southern Vermont College, and the Wild Rockies Field Institute. That sounds like a place I would really like to go.
It's a great place.
Shamu Sadeh also directed and developed curriculum for and taught at the Teva Learning Center in its early stages, and his essays and articles on environmental education and his championing of sort of a new approach to growing things, creating this sort of farming fellowship for Jews in their 20s, maybe it's up to their 30s now, it's been influential and part of the whole new Jewish foods movement. When I spoke to Nigel Savage of Chazon and we talked about sort of the new emphasis on food, obviously the food also has to come from somewhere. Can you explain your philosophical orientation towards reconnecting with the land?
Sure. You mean in terms of agriculture?
Yes, please.
I was a wilderness guide and taught environmental education for a long time. Testament. I thought that the best way for people to reconnect to trees and rivers and ecological processes, decomposition, the food web, was to take people outside and really get them excited about what was happening out there, right? And really opening their eyes to the beauty of a natural system. And farming is a whole nother way of doing that, right? It's a whole nother way of connecting people because you're working within a natural system, right? You have the cycles that you witness, whether it's the miracle of composting or the water cycle or, you know, just growth, germination and growth and fruiting and flowering and pollinating. It's an amazing, amazing, miraculous cycle. So you get to be in touch with, I think, some of the core religious experiences, which are awe, wonder, right, gratitude. And I think in terms, I think farming is a great way to come back to a relationship with the land.
This isn't really so far from the Jewish perspective when you think about the refounding of Israel and Zionism and the back to the land, the new Jews who were engaged in agriculture, but you're really doing a kind of, well, I don't know, it's a different sort of agriculture, isn't it really?
Yes, I think it is. Rabbi Cook, right, the first chief rabbi.
Avram Isaac Cook, right?
Yes. One of my favorite phrases, see if I can get it right in Hebrew. Hayashan Yitkadesh Veha Chadash Yitkadesh.
Yeah.
That the old will become new and the new will become sacred. Right? And he was someone who really worked towards kind of an integration. Right, an integration in Israel of, he worked with secular kibbutzniks and he worked with the religious community, obviously. And in the same way, we work towards an integration of the new and the old and making new things sacred. So it's true that you come on our farm and it's going to look a lot like small organic, other small organic sustainable farms. The practices we do are very, very similar, the same. Composting, cover cropping, crop rotation, encouraging beneficial pollinators, drip irrigation. And yet, you know, we're trying to make that new, that the innovative thing, holy in a way. And that's mostly through our intentions and through our design of what we do. It's different from the Zionist project in that, if we believe that all land is holy, that the returning to the land is something we can do wherever we are. And that we do it in a way, you know, most of the early Zionists obviously were pretty anti-religious, and we find a way to incorporate Jewish ritual and Jewish religious life into our work with the land.
Tell me how Adama works as an organization.
Sure. Well, we are a program of Isabella Friedman Jewish Retreat Center, which is our larger umbrella organization and our host here in Falls Village, Connecticut. And we have 5 full-time staff and 3 apprentices, and then bring on 14 Adamonics, Adama Fellows, in the summer and fall. And we have 3 farm business components. We have an organic kosher goat dairy. We make shev and feta and goat yogurt. And we have a value-added product business, which means we take the things we grow, like cucumbers and sour and cabbage, and make sauerkraut and pickles, also kosher, all organic, and very healthy products. And we have a CSA.
For those of us not so clear on the terminology, a community-supported agricultural, is it a cooperative?
It is. No, it's a partnership relationship between consumers and a farm, so that we have 50 families who sign up to get 26 weeks worth of vegetables with us. And every week we bring them a big box of beautiful vegetables picked that day, maybe the day before. And they pay us at the beginning of the season. It's a great way to support local and organic agriculture. And obviously Chazon and the Tuva Arts program has been instrumental in putting kind of Jewish organizational and institutional and consumer buying power behind the CSA model.
You know, it seems to me that there's been a sort of a slow growing movement towards being aware of what we eat and why it matters. It's connected and in some interesting ways, and maybe not connected, but happening at the same time. The notion that kashrut can also be magen tzedek, that there's an ethical kashrut, that the kind of food that we eat should be from sustainable agriculture, that we need to be health conscious, not only about our own bodies, but about the way that we eat and how it affects the natural world. Where do you see things going next?
You know, God willing, our alumni go on to start all kinds of projects that, you know, 5 years ago, if you told me that there would, you know, that we'd have four people, you know, four of our alumni on the staff of Kazon, which is now the largest Jewish environmental organization, and another half a dozen who've started similar Adama-like programs in, you know, Toronto and Chicago and California and Baltimore, I wouldn't have believed it. I'm not a great visionary, but I know how to throw the seeds, as you say. I know how to throw the seeds out there. I'm not sure what will happen.
Well, unlike the when you grow something, do you have a sense when you're planting a garden that it's a partnership with God? Do you have a feeling that, you know what's going to come up? Is there surprises in that process?
I think there always are surprises. We can get too caught up. I can get too caught up in the sense of control, of making the straight line and the straight square, you know, on the tractor with the irrigation, and the sense of certainty, this is what's going to happen, and we have our planting dates and our harvest dates. And then, you know, Friday afternoon here we do a pre-Shabbat walk around the field where we try to shift from a work day perception into a Shabbos perception, which everything is as it should be, right? We don't pick any more weeds. We don't fix any holes in the irrigation. And we recognize that what is out of our control and the right way. And it's those moments where we stop and where we pause. Sometimes we keep a shofar in the shed in the field, and it's a practice, you know, for people just to walk in there and blow it as a moment of, you know, it's like the Buddhists use a meditation bell. It's a moment of coming back to the present and realizing that we're part of something that's much larger than our own little plans.
I want to thank Shamu Sadeh, he's the director of Adama. How can people find out more about Adama and other food cooperative works?
Well, we are a modern organization, so the best way is, to come to our website. It's www.adama.org, ADAMAH.org, or through the Isabella Friedman website, which is www.isabellafriedman, that's Friedman with two E's, FREEDMAN.org. And we do have many opportunities for folks of all ages to come and join us here.
Thank you so much, Shama.
Thanks very much, Rabbi.
When we come back, we'll hear about next week's guest, get a final musical play out on Too Jewish.
Not just music, but the hills are alive with the sound of Purim. The most thoroughly fun Jewish holiday of all is coming to Temple Emmanuel in the greatest show yet. Sunday, March 20th at 10 a.m., the Purim Extravaganza Show and Spectacular Carnival will make this fabulously fun festival into a wonderful celebration for all ages. It's the Sound of Purim, a wonderful parody of The Sound of Music, exploring the story of the Book of Esther in full musical theater style, including takeoffs of all the classic songs from Do Adir to My Favorite Thing, in a spirit of humor, fun, and flat-out silliness. It's a Purim day filled with comedy, clowning, magic, games, fabulous food, don't miss the finest hamantaschen in all of Arizona, and carnival celebration. Everyone's invited, and the Purim show and entrance to the carnival are absolutely free. Call 327-4501 for more information. Come one, come all to the biggest and best Purim celebration in Arizona, all at Temple Emmanuel, Sunday, March 20th at 10 a.m. Call 327-4501 for Purim Extravaganza Fun for adults and children.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Next week, our guest will be Michael Rosenzweig, president and CEO of the brand new National Museum of American Jewish History in Philadelphia, the signature new Jewish museum in our country. Our playout this morning comes from the Yemenite Jews, yet another Arab country experiencing uprisings now. It's from the group Za'atar, which is the word for the Middle Eastern spice blend used in Israel as a seasoning and dip for breads. And it's their version of the classic Shalom Shabazi poem, Eshal Elohai. In deep chaos, I remember the powerful one, God, who brings me home singing. My friends, have a Shavua Tov, a good week and a week, we pray, of peace.
The preceding program was produced and paid for by Temple Emmanuel.